To the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my esteemed host and colleague, Phil, the Iceman Mendoza. And tonight we have a very special guest for you, a long anticipated guest. I know you guys have all probably been wondering when we would have him on the show. Well, your prayers have been answered. The hero has come to save the show. Yes, I'm talking about the man, the myth, the legend, the founder and creator of Train to Hunt, my good friend and sometimes boss, Kenton Claremont. How are you doing, Kenton?
Man, I am loving that intro. That's like right up there with when they introduced, gosh, Muhammad Ali. That's awesome, man. I'm
Oh,
doing well. I'm glad to be here.
You forgot all around badass too. You forgot all around
You forgot
badass.
all around badass. You forgot that. But we'll
Right.
let that slide, I guess. We'll let that slide.
It's tough because I wrote it on my hand and my hand's all sweaty now, so I can't really read the
Well,
intro.
crayon washes off, right? So,
Oh, good.
what's up, Kent, man? How's the East Coast or West Coast? Excuse me.
It's good, man. It's really good. I this is one of my favorite time of years, just because it's really because it's almost elk season. That's why. That and it's a time to kind of reflect on the past and how the season went, and get out and look at elk and start planning for the next month or so to see how we're going to get some meat in the freezer and put some hustle behind this muscle.
There you go. Hey, you had a pretty successful season last year, man. I know you got to hunt with Ryan some, you took a nice deer. It was early season, right? Early season you shot your buck last year?
Yeah, well, in Washington, there's just one season, and it lasts. You have to choose your weapon in Washington. So you either choose,
Cool.
you're going to be hunting with archery or hunting with a rifle. And so I always just like to get the archery tag. And really, the deer season here is it's about 26 days long, but it overlaps with the elk season. So we get about a 10, 11-day elk season, kind of smack dab in the middle of deer season. And yeah, I was actually out scouting for elk, and noticed this group of bucks that were kind of wandering around close to me, and so I just took note of where they were headed. And the next day, I decided I'm just going to give it a whirl, and ended up climbing up into a tree stand, and I was glassing around looking for elk, and these deer walked in, and I got them, smoked them. My decent first mule deer. Go figure.
So, you're the, I mean, you preach preparation all year and making sure you're ready physically and having that help you, with your hunt. What did you take from, I mean, what did you learn? You had a successful couple of kills last year, but how did that translate for you in your off season? I mean, you got 100 things going on, but what did you change from last year to now or throughout the year to be just that much more prepared?
Phil, really what I focused on in the off season this year was just shooting. Just I know that I'm kind of the physical side of preparation when it comes to hunting, and I that's kind of my avenue. That's my specialty. I'm the guy to call when you want to talk getting ready physically for a hunt. But I know that there's just a lot more to being successful in the field than just being in good shape. Otherwise, you just get in shape and take an Olympian of any sort and put them out in the field, and they'd be successful. There's field craft, and you have to master your weapon and tracking and glassing and being able to read maps, and there's a ton that goes into it. So really, I prepare all year and have for a long time. Just always been that guy that is always wants to be about 2 weeks away from being able to do anything, from a marathon to climbing Rainier, anything. So physically, I always feel like I'm prepared. So in the off season, I really focused most of my energy on shooting and just becoming a better archer. and having, because nothing really beats that confidence behind the bow. You know that you're going to be able to hit where you're aiming and be able to make that shot under pressure.
Yeah, for sure, man. I mean, I agree with you. I try to tweak something different every year and focus on something different. And this year, you know, with drawing the tag I did, I kind of started getting into hunt mode a little earlier than I usually get to. So yeah. I definitely got to play with, you know, I played with some more broadheads and, you know, tried a few different things on my setup. And that's it, man. So it's just continuing to mold the machine to try to find optimal, what's optimal and what's most efficient.
Yeah, and that's important. I think that's one of an overlooked, overlooked preparation in especially archery. You know, you really have to know your equipment and you have to test a bunch of equipment. Unfortunately, a lot of guys don't have the means to be able to go out and buy, you know, four or five different broadheads and test them. They just have to do their research online. And there's some really good forums and everything else that you can kind of tap into and good resources out there. But I mean, you hit it on the head. You have to master your weapon and know exactly where that bow is going to be shooting and with what broadhead. And, you know, I learn all the time from, I try to pick up as much as I can from everybody. You know, I just a couple of weeks ago, I learned about not tuning your arrow, not just, you know, shooting it through paper. But once you have it shot through paper, you take your next arrow and shoot it through paper. And if it doesn't tune, then you turn it a quarter turn and shoot that one. So, and it made sense once I heard, you know, the whole idea of not tuning each arrow, because usually I've just paper tuned it with one arrow and called it good. And then I just went out and shot, but, it's always good to just pick up, you know, little things here and there and just make you more aware and just a better archer, better hunter, better tracker, glasser, whatever it takes to become a better hunter.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, speaking of glassing, you know, being up sheep hunting last week, that, glassing up bighorn sheep in the mountains and in the high, you know, above timberline in the rocky terrain, That's a learned talent. I mean, time behind the glass and experience with time in the field. I say that's something that I overlooked, and I'm glad that I was with Aaron up there, because that guy is experienced in that area, along with a lot of other areas. And I tell you what, man, that was something that it was different from all around and difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a different area. You get up in sheep country, the one thing that glass does in sheep country is it saves you a ton of work. You know, if you can get really good behind the glass and you have a good spotting scope. And Phil, do you use the binocular mount for your tripod?
Yeah, yeah. And man, what a world's difference. I mean, people don't realize what that does.
It's unreal how much longer you can stay behind the glass and how much more steady you are. You start picking up things that you just don't realize how bad you shake until you have that thing out of your hands and on a tripod and you nose up to it and look around. And anyway, yeah, when Ryan and I went up to the Brooks up in Alaska, we brought our Vortex spotter and our Vortex binos and our mounts and everything else, because, you know, when you're spotting animals a couple miles away, and we're talking as a crow flies, I know what sheep country looks like. It's a lot of down and a lot of up. And yep. So if you can get good behind the glass, that's going to save you a lot of miles, you know, and a lot of effort, and a lot of time wasted, really, because, you know, just like you're a good example. I mean, you have a limited amount of time that you're able to spend in the field, being a businessman and a family man and everything else. It'd be different if your time was just kind of unlimited. You had all 30 days. You didn't have anything else to do except for go out, hunt sheep, and kill a sheep. But when your time's limited, you want to be the most efficient. And being efficient behind glass is a huge, huge asset.
Oh, yeah. And not having choosing to go you know, do it ourselves and not get an outfitter and, you know, do it the hard way, essentially, like you said, you know, limited time in the field and limited resources, you know, it makes everything that much more difficult. But, you know, hopefully if things work out and we get a tag out, you know, that's going to make it that much more rewarding. But
absolutely.
But hey, man, so shifting gears, you just got done with, and I call it the train to hunt, the you know, since you introduced the meat pack event, which was last year, this is kind of the second big year of train to hunt, but it's like your fifth year, right? Fourth or fifth year of doing the events.
Yeah, this year was actually year number four. Yep.
Okay.
Year number four. The first year we just had the pilot because I didn't know if, I mean, I knew people would be interested in doing it, but I didn't know to what extent. So I just threw a one event, one location pilot in Boise. And that was 4 years ago. And then the next year we did five locations. And then the year after that, which was last year, was the first year we did the national championship. So this is the second year of the full, you know, full circuit and then the national qualifier.
And you know, I tell you, I guess I'll touch on my experience, I guess, this year, different from last year, and Will maybe can touch on a little bit the same, but and then we want to, I guess, open the floor to you just with you know, this is your baby, man, but I guess, like I said, to start off real quick, I went to the first event in Arizona, and I tell you what, it set the tone for the year. I was anticipating train to hunt all winter. Getting out there, having you and Matt and Will, you know, and then guys like Brock and Ray, Gabe, you know, it was back to the crew, back to family, you know, and it was a good time and kicked it off right, man. And then, you know, a couple months later we had Colorado and freaking 106 people. And then it seemed like it kept rolling. So, I mean, I anticipated to take a step forward this year from last year. I think it took a couple steps forward this year as far as the growth and the reach. And what do you think, Will?
Yeah. You know, it was a very different experience for me in that I was behind the scenes in Arizona, so I got to see, you know, all the stuff Kenton goes through, and, you know, it's a lot of work to put one of these events on. You know, you got to have a solid group of volunteers, and, you know, you really got to hustle once you're there setting all this stuff up. And, you know, then going up to Idaho to compete, it was cool because I feel like no matter what event you go to for a train to hunt event, you meet very similar people at each event, just really good, awesome, nice, you know, passionate archers and bow hunters at these events. You know, I haven't met a bad person once at any of these things. And one of my biggest, I don't know if I'd say disappointments, but something that I was kind of bummed out about was not being able to make it to Nationals this year. I ended up on a honeymoon, so, you know, which was excellent, but you know, there was a lot of people I didn't know at Nationals who I would have loved to just meet and, you know, shoot the shit with about trying to hunt, as well as, you know, compete and experience that camaraderie and community. Because I've said it before, train to hunt, much like CrossFit, attracts a lot of great, amazing people and has just a great atmosphere around it and involved in it. And the people are awesome. So, you know, for me, it was just, you know, more continued excellence. That's how I saw it.
Yeah, you know, you guys hit a lot of really good points as far as how this year went. I was thrilled with the growth and the number of people who came out. And everywhere I went, I, you know, took kind of a poll of how many people, this is your very first train-on challenge ever. And I bet that probably 55 to 60% of the people that participated this year, it was their very first one. And it's just great to see that people are starting to hear about it. I mean, this is kind of a grassroots type of company that, you know, I started out with nothing but workouts on the internet. And when I found out that, you know, guys are really starting to fall off pretty quick at the beginning of the year, and they're not really focusing on training year round because hunting season is so short. It's, you know, September, October, November. If you're lucky, it kind of creeps into December, January. But there's such a big, long lull between hunting seasons that I noticed the guys just, they were letting their fitness kind of fall off by the wayside. So, you know, I just wanted to give guys something to train for in the middle of the summer so that they keep in shape, be in shape for the competitions, you know, hopefully make nationals, be in top physical condition for nationals, and then just ride it out into the hunting season. And it seems to be spreading quickly. And, you know, I think that if you're somebody who is very health conscious and fitness aware and a hard charging, forward thinking guy that just goes after it, a lot of times you end up standing by yourself a lot. I don't know about you guys, but I have been through tons and tons of training partners because they just, they're okay for a while and they kind of knock off. The nice part about the train to hunt community is that it brings all those people together and they get to, you know, meet each other and say, hey, let's get together. Hey, I live in the same place you do. Let's get together and work out. And I don't know how, I mean, you guys probably know more better than I do, but I don't know how many friendships and hunting partners and training partners have come just through the community and through the events. But I know a lot. I know there's been a lot of movement just in the off season, you know, with the Warrior Training Camp up at, you know, with Aaron Snyder. And I know that Wayne Endicott's got something going out there in Oregon. And there's just a lot of movement in the fitness realm around the hunting athlete. And it's great to see. And I think a lot of this is happening because guys and girls are meeting at the events and saying, hey, I'm looking for a training partner. Hey, so am I. Well, let's get together and let's do this. So it's great. For me, I really wanted to get to a point where it almost becomes the standard. And, you know, I know both of you guys miss nationals, but really my ultimate dream with Train to Hunt and the Train to Hunt Challenge is to kind of use it as a platform to introduce kind of a new generation of bow hunters or hunters just in general to, you know, the non-hunting or the anti-hunting America, that we're not just a bunch of guys, you know, riding around in pickup trucks, drinking beer and shooting things out our windows and, you know, cutting off heads. We're actually just becoming, you know, we're very aware of what we eat and we take pride in participating in the collection of our food. And we like to, you know, feed our families through wild game. And in the meantime, we're fitness and health aware. We're passing it on to the next generation, to our kids, to our neighbors, to our friends, our cousins. And even if they don't choose to hunt, we're okay with that. You know, just choose a healthy lifestyle, get outside, see nature, be part of the world and live. So that's really the ultimate goal for Train to Hunt, is just to, you know, introduce a new generation of bow hunters, of hunters just in general, that we care, and we care a lot. And that's it, you know, bring families together and bring like-minded people together and throw down and get your ass kicked every once in a while, you know?
You know, I'm really glad you said it the way you did about this new generation of bow hunters, because they're also very conservationally aware, you know, in that when we talk about, you know, animal populations and, you know, maybe a die-off rate and other statistics that play into, you know, animals' deaths or, you know, rise and fall in populations and value of, you know, maybe a public land or resources of that nature, hunters as a whole are becoming better and more educated as how much of an important role they play in those ecosystems. And I think non-hunters don't really realize how important hunters are to conservation.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right, Will. I mean, education, we live in the cyber world. Education is at your fingertips, and people are becoming more aware. There's tons of foundations that that are spreading the word really well through social media, through just the internet, and you're right. You know, people are becoming more aware of two things, and one of them is conservation, and the other is food awareness, where their food comes from.
Yeah, and you know, the, not to downplay any other part of that, what you guys just said, but like, you know, Ken, you touched on the community thing, you know, before meeting like-minded people. And, you know, I see it a lot at my shop, and, you know, we've got a pretty good reputation now about being part of the in crowd with Train to Hunt at my archery shop, you know, because there's a lot of people that compete out of there. We try to get people prepared through there, and
you're the cool.
And we just try to, we're integrating Train to Hunt into our archery community. And I tell you, I can't tell you how many people come in the door and say, how did it go this year? Did you make it to Nationals? It's one question or another. And these are customers of mine that some of them you would never think, you know, picked up a weight in their life or ran a mile in their life. You know what I mean?
Right.
But others, it's just, they're into it on behind the scenes. You know, they're kind of on the outside, just wondering, if I should try this or not. And I tell you what, those people are just, you know, half a step away from being at the next event, because, you know, they're interested, they're inquiring about it, they're curious, you know, they're asking questions. And I tell you what, it's almost somebody every day that brings up Train to Hunt in the shop now, you know, and it's great because, you know, like I said, Colorado had 106 this year, man. I thought we were going to be like in the 80s, you know. I was like, we were mid 50s last year. I think we'll get probably like 80, maybe 90 people. And we were 105. So if we keep that growth rate, you know, I know that there was some talk about maybe having to cap some events. If you have to cap events, Colorado might be the first one telling people, you know, sorry, sign up earlier next year or go to Casper.
Yeah.
But what do you think? I mean, what do you see it going with that? Do you anticipate having to cap? You're going to try to facilitate as many as you can for a while? What's the plan?
I do. Well, here's the plan. The plan is to get people on the ball to sign up for a Train to Hunt challenge. If we're, you know, specifically with Colorado. So this year I'm going to put out the schedule for next year. Like, these are the locations, these are the dates, and this is the time that registration is going to open. Now, if some of those guys in Colorado drag their feet a little bit, they may end up missing out on being able to do the Colorado qualifier. Now, you and I both know that some of those guys that miss out, that drag their feet, they're going to go, shoot, man, and they're going to sign up for the Wyoming qualifier. And if they miss the Wyoming qualifier, then that they won't miss it again. They'll find some place to compete. And the other cool thing that I'm going to be able to do this year, Phil, is I'm going to be able to have some analytics where I'm going to be able to see how many people got turned away for each event. Like, we're going to have to cap it at 100 numbers. Okay, that means that there could be 150 people, but that means there's 25 teams. So 100 numbers is going to be the cap, but, you know, it gets capped at 100 numbers and 50 more people get bounced out of Colorado. Well, I'll know then that in 2017, we have to have another one in Colorado. Colorado's holding enough people that its demands are another qualifier. So that's where, how I'm going to handle the cap. I've racked my brain throughout the years to try to figure out how to take the lid off the jar. And, you know, I haven't given up on the possibilities of being able to do that. But for next year's sake, we're just going to open up. We're going to announce registration, the date. And then, I mean, what I think will probably happen is, you know, in the first 12 hours of Colorado, it'll probably sell out.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and you know, it's definitely going to be a time sensitive issue with Colorado. And then what was the second biggest event this year? Was it Casper?
The second biggest event was Oregon, and it was and it was 68.
Cool.
Yeah, and you know, I think that one there was probably 10 or 12 people that last minute said, oh, you know, something came up, which happened in every location. It's, you know, I think next year Oregon will probably look a lot like Colorado, and Colorado will be capped. And the nice part about next year, Phil, is that there's going to be a ton of different options. And, you know, I can tell you right now where our expansion sites are going to be, the for sure ones and then the maybe ones. So the for sure expansion sites on top of Washington, Idaho, Oregon, Wyoming, Colorado, and Arizona, on top of that, we're going to be going Texas, Tennessee, Pennsylvania, and then the other possibilities. We're also going to go to Nevada, to Reno, Nevada. That's in stone. But other possibilities are upstate New York. Montana is going to happen this year. That's another one that's going to happen. So there's going to be 14 different qualifiers next year. So there's going to be a ton of opportunity to, you know, to jump into one of those qualifiers and qualify for nationals. And, you know, like we've talked about, it's a good opportunity for some people. I mean, it is summertime to, you know, maybe make a little vacation out of it, you know, take the family to Tennessee or Texas or Pennsylvania, or go see Will in New York. And,
all are welcome.
And throw down with those East Coast boys. I'm really excited about getting to the East Coast, man. I'm super excited. I know there's some really serious bow hunters out there. And since day one, I've had people, you know, on the East Coast saying, hey, when are you going to come out here? When are you going to come out here? And so I'm really excited to announce that we are going to be in Pennsylvania, Texas, Tennessee, and hopefully New York. And, you know, in 3 years, my goal is in 3 years, we're in all 50 states.
Yeah, no, that's. I mean, there's a lot of potential for growth, and I mean, it's just it's such a unique event that we've always talked sky's the limit. It's just a matter of getting the right people in place to help work the events and facilitate the administrative side of the stuff, because the people will come, right? I mean, are coming already. So
yeah,
I've got to ask you a question, and it's not from any perspective I'm trying to take a jab at you or anything like that, but the new scoring system, I'll say that I'm really happy with a lot of the new tweaks you made this year, but there's been a couple events where it still has some kinks to iron out, and it's a difficult system to score because it's one of a kind, but there's a couple scoring mistakes, right? I mean, I guess I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but there was a couple mistakes that were made. What are you working on to try to fix that or correct that, or there's some things that you're thinking about changing, or what, tell us about that. I mean, what's your thoughts on what you did different this year, and you know, what's to come?
Yeah, man. So that's one thing that I try to be as best I can, and that's transparent. And one of the things that I don't feel like I did a very good job at this year was really trying to explain and make sure everybody understood the new scoring system. And this is how it worked. So last year, each event one, which was the 3D shoot, event two, the meat pack, and event three, the train hunt challenge course, were worth X amount of points. Last year, the case was 100 points for the 3D, 100 points for the meat pack, and 200 points for the train hunt challenge course. Because I feel like the challenge course should be double the points, because it kind of all-encompassing. You can be a great shot and not have a lick of fitness behind you and win the 3D course. You can be a beast in the field, but you can't hit the broadside of a barn with your bow, and you can win the meat pack. But in order to win the challenge course, you have to be really well-rounded. You have to have at least those two tools. You got to be physically fit. You got to be able to move efficiently, and you have to be able to shoot your bow. So last year, if you won any of those events, you just received max points. You received 100 points. If you came in second, regardless of how bad you got beat by the person who finished number two or number one, you still got 99 points. So let's say, you know, Phil and I are in and doing a meet pack. Phil finishes in 10 minutes. I finish in 12 minutes. Phil would get 100 points. I'd get 99, and that was the end of that. And then it just fall in. Third would get 98, 97, 96, and so on. Well, this year I decided to tweak a little bit and reward people for really having an outstanding performance. Like if you beat somebody in the meat pack by 2 minutes, I felt like you should get rewarded for that effort. So if you cross the line in 8 minutes and you were number one, and the close person to you was like 10 minutes away, I felt like you should be awarded for that. So for every 15 second segment that you beat the person behind you, you got one more point of separation. So here's how it works. First place got 100 points, and then we looked at the difference between first place and second place, and for every 15 seconds there was between first and second, that person got an additional point knocked off. So if you beat me by 2 minutes, you got 100. I started at 99, and I subtracted 8 additional points from that because that's 8 15-second segments. So I would receive 91 points. Well, third place would start at 90 points, and for every 15 seconds that I beat them, then they would get an additional point knocked off. So it really awarded people for their effort and really made it so that people weren't allowed to say, well, I don't really need to hustle. I'm beating everybody behind me. And even though the person in front of me is way ahead of me, they're way ahead of everybody, so it doesn't really matter. I can just kind of dog it here a little bit and take some time off. So it worked out really, really well. I think the scoring system really separated the right people, and the problem with it is the human error factor, right? So anytime that you're keeping score and there's some math to be done, there's human error that's gonna happen. I've had numerous people make me spreadsheets and nothing's quite worked out exactly the way it needs to be worked so that just anybody can work it. But there is human error in spreadsheets too, because if you don't give the right person their credit, then the whole spreadsheet gets messed up too. Does that make sense? So like if my time gets put in Phil Mendoza's spreadsheet slot, then that's an error too. So it's impossible to take human error completely out of the picture unless it's automated. You know, like I think that let's take the CrossFit Games for instance, because it's fairly simple, and same with Spartan Race. Those are just simply timed events that have judges on movements. So they take the scoring system out of it by just having time chips. Just, you know what, we know who won because we got time chips on you, and at the end of each heat it spits it out, and we know who finished first, second, third, fourth, and fifth, and that's really the end of it. Because everything that's handled in between there with range of motion and making sure you get the right reps, that's all handled by judging, and then there's human error in that. So it's really tough to take human error completely out of it. But I'm working on it, Phil. I think what I'm going to do this off season is I'm just going to find a company or a guy that is just a complete spreadsheet nerd. I'm going to sit down with them and I'm going to say, this is what I need. This is how it's going to keep score. This is how easy, simple I need it to be. And we're going to try and get everything pretty much automated. Obviously we can't take the human error factor completely out of it. If a judge enters, an X for number 8 or number 9, and it's supposed to be number 6, there's that too. But we're gonna do our best. We're working on it.
Yeah, no, and like I said, it's I helped you do some scoring on some of the divisions in Colorado, and I just kind of sat in to help and learn,
yeah.
Right? And I tell
yeah.
you what, we double checked, and on the double
yep.
checking, we even found a mistake. You know, it's like it happens,
yep.
right? And in any archery event, because like you said, you have the human element. Well, one person, even when you're going to call arrows, if one judge looks at an arrow down there and they don't want to bend over and give it a fair shake, they might say, oh, that's an 8, right? And if they
right.
were to just get down, look at the arrow on the right plane, they could see us touching the line, you know? So
right.
it's one of those things, just kind of an element involved. There's always room for mistakes, but I will agree that the way that you guys, you know, handled the time break on the scoring for the meat pack and the challenge course, man, I thought that was money. You know, I really did. I still
yeah,
have the gripe about archery, about the shooting part of it not getting 100 points. I'm still complaining to you about that, because here's my argument, and I told you before, right? It's not for beating a dead horse or anything like that, but it's like you said, if you're the best guy on the meat pack event, you get 100 points. You don't have to be perfect,
yep.
but if you're the best guy out of the group, you get 100 points. If you're
yep.
the best guy in the shooting, and the course dictates that it's a hard-ass course, the best score might be a 75. But you just
right.
devalued shooting to the meat pack by 25% because the course dictated that. So
right.
even though the course on the meat pack could dictate slower times, maximum points are still 100 points. So and I talked to Ryan about it too, and it's like he's like, well, what do you do different? How do you do it different? And I think
right.
that you giving the shooter what they shot, I think it's good, because like you said, if somebody kills it and the rest of the group is 10, 15 points behind them, well, congratulations to the guy that killed it, you know?
Right,
but
right.
what about just issuing first place 100 and then breaking it down from there based on the difference? You know,
we picked around a bunch of different ideas to try and figure out how we were going to kind of follow suit with the 3D shoot, with a lot, giving the winner 100 points, and then okay, so from there, how do we award the difference? What happened, Phil, was that we felt like the difference would be the difference regardless of the points. You see what I'm saying? So let's say you shot an 80 and the guy behind you shot a 70. All right. So we give you 100 points
uh-huh.
and we go, okay, well, there's a 10 point difference between the two. So let's go 10 point difference. So you get 100, he gets 90. And behind him was like a 69. So okay, then he gets an 89. So the points would be the point, regardless of whether we gave you what you shot or we started you at 100. Now, hindsight's always 20/20, right, brother?
Oh yeah. No, and I'm just this is all for conversation piece, because we've talked
yeah,
about
yeah.
it.
So
but,
so hindsight, but, we look back hindsight and we say, okay, so if that was our thought process, was that, well, the points were the points, so the spread's going to be the same. What it does is it does a couple different things. One, it makes the shooting part of the of day one, like between the 3D shoot and the meat pack, it makes the shooting part actually worth more. Not worth more points, but more like more pressure. Like, I got to shoot well because the meat pack is really worth more points, right? Like, because you're going to get 100 points if you win the meat pack. That makes sense? So, like
yeah.
a guy could really make up a ton of ground on you in the meat pack because it's worth 100 points, and he's going to get 100 points for winning first place. So we kicked around the idea of actually making it 100 and then just making it 190, 89 and so on. And then we were like, you know what? I think that the shooting is probably important enough in hunting that it should be a little more pressure shooting. And so we went with that this year. I think next year, Phil, we're going to do it the other way. I think the next year we're going to probably do it the way I described, and that is the winner will get 100 points, and then whatever the gap is between first and second, that's what the gap will be from 100 and not from what they shoot. Because I do want the shooting, because I do believe that shooting, if you can't shoot, you're not going to have meat in the freezer, right? Like, period.
Right.
You can be the best tracker, glasser, scouter. You can be in the best physical shape. You can get on every day. You can sneak in. You can be great. But if you can't shoot, you're not filling the freezer. But with that said, for the sake of the event, the 3D course should be worth as many points as the meat pack. So
yeah, it poses another math issue, you know. I don't want to say it's a bad thing. I mean, it's easy to figure out. If you shot a 89, you get 89. If you shot a 75, you get 75, right? So for ease of score and math purposes, man, and efficiency, as these things grow, you want to keep your job as easy as possible. So
yeah,
I see the point, man. Like, I see it both ways.
Yeah, we definitely want to keep the scoring system simple and quick, because, as you know, there's a long enough lull between events just to get everybody scored and the board out. But at the same token, it's not that much more work. It really isn't. I mean, if you can add and subtract, get in there, do a little bit of math, and really, let's face it, when you're talking about a 3D shoot, you're going to have your two or three guys that are kind of separated from the pack. And then you're going to have a bunch of stacked people in the middle that are all going to get about the same score. And then you're going to have your three or four, you know, at the bottom. And so it's not that tough to score. It was just something that we thought we'd see how it played out this year, and see if we thought at the end of the year, it was something that we'd want to change or something we want to stick with. And, you know, Ryan and I had a discussion, and really the archery component was we tried to stress it by, you got to shoot, you have a possibility of getting 100, so shoot really well, you get a super high score. But it ultimately became less significant over the weekend. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because you couldn't score 100 points. You couldn't.
Well,
you know, you could, but the likelihood of shooting 100 points, we had four or five people shoot 95s.
Cool.
But it's just a different ball game, and the scoring system is something that is always going to be something I think that won't ever make everybody happy. But at the same time, I need to make sure that everybody's very clear about the scoring system too, so that you know, there's strategy that comes into play with, you know, the meat pack and the challenge course. Once you kind of know, all right, I can't lose to this guy by more than 2 minutes or else he's going to pass me. And if you don't understand the scoring system real well, then, that's you're not going to be able to go into it with much of a strategy, which, you know, might be an upside. Just go out and do your best and let the chips fall where they may. But I'm going to do my very best this off season to try to be real transparent and clear about this scoring system, because I would want to know. If I'm going into competition, I want to know the rules. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll give it everything I got. I just want to know the rules. And I think there were some people that weren't real clear about how it was being scored, and I want to change that this year, because, you know, those are the things that kind of distract people from really what it's all about. And, you know, that's just, you know, people getting together and sharing some sweat and blood and tears and becoming friends. So I want to take all those distractions out. And really, that's what I see them as, is just, they're just distractions. You know, people get kind of caught up in the competition of it all. And if I get the less distractions with confusion of where the meat pack course is and scoring systems and those kind of things, it'll leave a lot more room for people talking about how great of an event it was rather than, oh man, I can't believe it. You know, I didn't think I'd lose. I didn't understand the scoring system. I didn't, you know, whatever it might be. But in large, I think everybody had a really good time this year. It's one of those things. It's amazing, guys. Like, very few people, like, had anything negative to say. It was always like, hey, I'm not real clear on this, or have you thought about this, or have you considered trying this? And but man, you know, smiles on faces and a lot of really great feedback. I just hope it continues to grow, because that's what I always want it to be about, is about people getting together, like-minded guys getting together, girls getting together, and bringing their families and having a good time and making a weekend out of, you know, being fit and healthy and shooting our bows.
That brings me to a point. The only time I ever saw negativity is on Facebook when you had a video up of somebody, one of the shots was going to be you had to go from a lying position, draw back, sit up, and shoot.
Yeah.
You would have thought you were burning people alive by the response I saw on Facebook.
Yeah,
people were losing their minds.
I know. Hey, you know what, though? I don't know if you – I waited till the end of the day. I had a bunch of people tell me how much negative, you know, crap was going up on that video. And I just don't let that stuff get to me. I don't bother with the internet tough guys. You know, I don't. And really, I think to myself, like, my wife was concerned that, you know, are you okay? Are you taking it hard? And I was like, you know, really, the fact of the matter is that you haven't really arrived in the hunting industry until you have some real haters. And that was about the first time I'd seen some people up there just like really hating on what we were doing. It was one shot. And for those of you that missed it, it was a shot. You know, every 3D shoot, Hunter's 3D shoot, I'm trying to simulate a situation you might run into in the field. And, you know, I understand not everybody hunts antelope. Not everybody's fox, mule deer. Not everybody hunts in real, you know, tall grass, sagebrush type areas, but there's a situation where you might be, you know, basically lying flat on your back to stay out of sight in the tall grass, and you know, you can hear this antelope, this buck, whatever it might be, it's coming. So you draw your bow while in the prone position, you sit up and shoot it. Well, that was one of the shots. And that's we had some internet tough guys out there that said had a lot to say about that, about the risk and injury, and you're going to get somebody hurt, and oh, I thought you guys were teaching good ethics, and you know, it's if there was somebody who had ever done a train to hunt challenge, you know, I would probably just contact them and, you know, find out what their big concern is. But these are just people that they probably spend all day eating Cheetos and hating on people that can do stuff that they can't do. So it's not that big of a deal. It's always going to happen. And, you know, we have the internet to thank, but we just roll with the punches and we keep trudging forward. You know, we're doing it with or without you. If you choose to sit on the sidelines and criticize, and it's too bad, man, because you should join the living and come join us.
So you're telling me you don't sweat the keyboard jockey pussies who don't have the balls enough to come out, put it on the line, and compete?
Not a drop. Not a drop of sweat, brother. Not a one.
I didn't think so.
Not a one, because yeah, that's just kind of the way the world works. I grew up in a small town. Everybody's entitled to their opinion, and you let it roll off your back, and you keep being you, and you keep doing what you do best. And what I do best is put on events and, you know, bring people together in the name of fitness and bow hunting. And I'm not going to let armchair quarterback ruin my day because I got, you know, 100 people around me that's saying otherwise. It was great shooting. and they do it again. So, yeah, right, man, so. It's a wacky world, that internet, and it's only going to get worse, Will. So, you know, it's only going to get worse.
Oh, I revel in it. I revel in it. All them little bitches who are there hating, I just shake it off, just like Taylor Swift. It's like, this is what I find funny, right?
Yeah, you should say Taylor Swift.
That's hell yeah, awesome. Shake it off, Kenton. Just shake it off.
Shake it off, brother.
Shake it off. Dude, you know what I'm talking about. Hey.
Hey, Ken, this is something I learned on the last podcast. Will's quite the dancer. So, I think I can say that there's a lot of we don't know about Will. So, Taylor Swift, some salsa dancing.
I got moves.
Any and all of that, man, I think it's going to make for some interesting, ATA shows or other gatherings when we get together again.
I'm telling you, these hips don't lie.
I agree. I'm telling you, every group needs a Will Bradley. When everything's serious, he has a way to just lighten it up immediately. It's awesome. I'm way too serious of a guy. I take my life way too serious, and I take everything. Wife's always telling me I take way too serious. Always have like this serious look on my face in fitness mode. But man, I love guys like that around me. Aren't afraid to lighten things up a little bit.
Ken, you know what you got?
What?
You got the male version of resting bitch face.
Well, I thought it was like, what do you call that?
The 1,000-yard stare?
Like Blue Thunder or something.
Blue Steel?
Blue Steel.
You've got that 1,000-yard death stare. Like, you're putting daggers through people's eyes, and I've seen it. I know there's just something going on in your head, and you're just zoned out, looking like a mile away.
I know. I've been accused of that more than once. Like, dude, just stare at me. What are you thinking about?
You're mean mugging some bitch.
Oh, man.
You know, this is what I got a kick out of, right? So all these people go losing their minds on the internet over this one shot, right? Just, you know, caring about shit that, frankly, they shouldn't care about because, well, they'll probably never make it to Nationals, so they'll never have to take that shot. Right. Second is all the guys I talked to since Nationals, not a one mentioned that shot. Not a one's complained about it. Nobody's like, hasn't even come up, and they haven't even brought it up in conversation. You know what I mean? After they did it, that was probably the last time they thought about it. However, the 80-pound get-ups, I've heard a lot about.
You guys, as soon as you heard about the 80-pound get-ups, you guys like, man, I'm glad I didn't make that shit. That sounds terrible.
You know what I thought is you guys haven't been paying attention to the Train to Hunt programming because I've been seeing 70-pound get-ups in the heavy get-ups.
That's right. This is a great
one second, Ken. I think Phil's getting murdered in his house. You all right, Phil?
No, I'm good, man. Sorry.
Do you want me to call 911? I'm right. Mendoza residence?
No, man. I'm wrangling the little guy. Sorry.
What do you got him held upside down by his foot?
Oh, almost. So back to 80-pound get-up.
Okay, so that's a good point, Will. You brought up a good point in that I don't know what percentage of Train to Hunt Challenge competitors actually follow the Train to Hunt programming, but I can tell you this, that if they did, they wouldn't have been so surprised about the 80-pound get-ups because I will put 70 pounds, 60 pounds, 40-pound get-ups in the programming. You know, not all the time, but every once in a while. And I tried to tell people throughout the qualifiers, hey, if you kind of want to sneak preview into what's going on at Nationals, follow the Train to Hunt programming because the same guy who's putting those workouts out is the same guy that's designing the challenge for us. So, just a little tidbit I'll throw out there to everybody. And it's something that I understand, Will. I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people about the Train to Hunt programming. And the one thing that is very accessible to everybody is free workouts. You can go on the internet, go to any just Google CrossFit. You get a ton of free workouts. My argument is that if you're working out by yourself, if you're not part of a CrossFit box, part of a CrossFit community, which you are, Will, and you can attest to this, then you should be doing 100% training workouts if you're training for hunting season. Now, even if you are part of a train to hunt community, I would advise you that you still become a member and at least pepper your workouts with train to hunt workouts, because very rarely will you walk into a CrossFit box and get a workout where you get to A, shoot your bow, B, you're doing movements with weighted packs. A lot of the CrossFit, and I love the CrossFit community. For those of you that don't know, I owned a CrossFit box for 5 years. I love it. I love the CrossFit community. I love what they stand for, and they got a lot of Americans off their ass, and I love it. But they're Olympic lifting, gymnastics, and cardio, and they have kind of their philosophy, not their philosophy, but kind of their movement, each box. And very rarely will you find a box that will kind of break from that. Some of them will get into the strongman movement. Some of them will get into other things, but very rarely will you find a box that will go, okay, all right, bring your backpacks and, 100 pounds of weight. We're doing a workout with 100 pounds or 80 pounds or 60 pounds in your backpack. And by the way, bring your bows because we're going to be shooting too. So that's my two bits on the train to hunt program. I mean, it just came about because I'd been training so many athletes for so long that I wanted to train a hunting athlete and start the movement of a new generation of bow hunters that were in shape, that were fit, that were doing the correct sport-specific movements for their sport, which is, I know some people don't like to think of hunting as a sport, but we're going to refer to it as a sport for the sake of this conversation.
The original
they're
sport.
Doing, yeah, right, the original.
Frankly, doing, the sport of survival, if you want to put it out there.
It's true. I mean, here's a conversation I had with way back when. I said, okay, you don't think hunters are athletes, because this came up, and you can imagine it came up very frequently when that first hunting athlete came out. And they're like, hunters aren't athletes. I'm like, okay, well, let's just imagine this. Let's go back, say, 200, 300 years, where people were living in communities and they just kind of had these small towns or small communities that they lived in. Who do you think that they sent out to get the winner's meat? Do you think they sent out, somebody who couldn't shoot, was in terrible shape, had no persistence, had no grit, had no athletic ability whatsoever? Back then, they didn't call it athletic ability because they didn't. There was no sports, right? There was no traditional sports. But I would argue that the Indians, the Pilgrims, the community, the people, the cavemen. The people who were the hunters that went out and they were responsible for getting the meat for the village, or else they died. I guarantee you, one, that person had their skills honed in. Number two, they were probably in really good shape and probably the most persistent people in the community. Number three, they knew how to track. They knew how to kill. They had some and even though they didn't call them athletes, I guarantee you the best athletes in that community just out hunting shit. It wasn't the fat guy who they just, hey, I got an idea. Let's send Billy out to try and get some meat. This will be hilarious. No, they didn't do that. It's just because we
Billy
live in a world
back
now.
With me, everyone's starving.
Yeah, man. It's because we live in a world now where very few people 100% rely on a winter's harvest or a fall harvest, life or death. I mean, there's too many government systems in place. We're not going to let anybody die. No one's going to starve because it doesn't happen anymore. So people look at that and they say, well, there's absolutely no need for hunting. Well, they don't. Number one, they know nothing about conservation. Number two, just because there isn't, we're not out there life or death situation doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it. I mean, we are human after all. We are within our DNA. If it wasn't for the past hunters in this planet's history, guess what? We wouldn't be here. Like, if some, so I promise you, somewhere down our ancestral line, there was a lot of really good hunters, or else we wouldn't be here. So it's just, it's in our DNA. You know, personally, my theory is that we just, we, technology has surpassed us, our, you know, the evolution of man so quickly that we just kind of forget where we came from. We forget who we are. We forget what we're designed for. And, you know, so, you know, the people who are living in big cities and, you know, living off government, you know, systems that are in place, or even if they're not, and they, you know, they go to the grocery store and get their food, well, that, you know, who are they to tell me that I shouldn't be out taking responsibility for my own meat? I mean, that's a whole nother conversation, right? I could go on and on about people who are hypocrites about, oh, you shouldn't be hunting your own meat. But they'll go and get a Big Mac at McDonald's or whatever.
You know, that's the thing. You do see a lot of hypocrites out there driving around with cars with leather seats, wearing leather shoes, leather jackets, just totally oblivious to where the products come from. But for some reason, when, you know, it's you taking it into your own hands and doing it yourself, you've become the bad guy. You're enemy number one all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. And what's the new hot topic now is what? Trophy hunting. Like, that's a whole nother level of...
What's that?
It's trophy hunting.
Trophy hunting, yeah.
A whole nother level of anti-hunting is, you know, the people who are out trophy hunting. And it's different, man. Like, I think that there's a misconception...
Hold on 1 second. Phil, can I get you to turn down your microphone a little bit?
Okay. You got my kid's toys in the, yeah, in the background too much?
Background noise off you.
Sorry, let me come get out of the way a little bit. I'm in a hollow area.
That's all right. I understand. You're a wanted man in the household.
Yeah.
Hey, that's better. What are you saying, Kenton?
Now he's got one kid like hung over his shoulder, one by the ankles. And...
That's Phil. That's where, you know, the term natural born hunter comes from. You know, it's what we're born to do, whether, you know, you're out there hunting meat, or, you know, hunting down your dreams, or like Phil, you know, hunting his kids down throughout his house, toys, trying to get them all wrangled together. You know, we're born to hunt. We're natural hunters, man.
That's right. We are adventure seekers.
Yeah.
We are. That's what we're born to do. We were born to, you know, and I don't know. I think everybody has a degree of adventure seeking in them, but I do believe at every man's core they want to be challenged. I think that that's the exact reason why, you know, events like Spartan Race and Tough Mudder and CrossFit, people are just like, you know what? I want to see if I can do it. I want to see if I can, you know, I want to see if I can PR. I want to see if I can get in the best shape of my life. I want to see if I can deadlift 300 pounds. I want to see if I can complete the Spartan Race course. And I want to see if I can do the training hunt challenge. I want to see if I can complete this thing. So.
You know, that's an important part to, I think, what makes the trained hunt community so awesome is you found these people who say, you know, I want to chase the adventure. I want to chase the challenge, see what I'm made of, you know. And everybody else there is thinking the same thing.
Right, exactly. And it's fun, Will. It, you know, you've got a glimpse of it. It's a lot of work, but it's still worth it. And I'm so looking forward to next year because I got, you know, you guys all in place. And the one thing that I'm looking forward to is being able to, you know, put you guys out front and, you know, let you get the credit you deserve and be able to run some challenges. And, you know, when people think about training to hunt, they think about Will Bradley and Brock Akers and Ray Hibnett and Matt Mint and, you know, all these guys that have really just said, I'm all in, I want to help out, what can I do? And without you guys, you know, we've been kind of stuck in the mud. And it's thanks to, you know, guys like Phil Mendoza and, I mean, that have just come out of the woodworks and said, I'm all in, man. What can I do to help? What can I do to spread the word? What can I help you in any way, shape, or form? And it's a really unique characteristic, and it's something that I found over and over at these training hunt challenges. Guys are willing to give away all their secrets, even though they're competed against. Guys are willing to give up their time and sacrifice some things to be part of something that they really believe in. And I guess it's important that both these guys know that I couldn't do it without you guys. I really couldn't.
Yeah, that's something I'm always saying. Train to hunt would never happen if it wasn't for me.
Well,
anyone listening to the podcast knows it. Lifeblood.
That kind of goes without saying.
Yeah. So on a personal level, this is something I'm curious about, and we've talked a little bit about it, and that is you yourself. What are your plans for competition next year? Because I know you've mentioned maybe doing the Open for CrossFit, or
it's right now. Will, I have ten old and a 4-year-old, and I work full time as a ranch hand on a huge cattle ranch out here in Western Spokane. So my time's really limited. I really miss competition, but I've decided that I'm gonna just continue to bang away, get in shape, see where things go, and if I have my way and I have the time and it doesn't take away from, my family time too much, I want to compete in the CrossFit Open. I want to go compete in the Spartan Race circuit, and I would love to go out and just compete in a train hunt challenge. Just go as a competitor and just do it. I mean, this is something that I've, kind of lost, hours and hours of sleep over, trying to come up with the best courses and the best situations and locations. And it would be great to go out and just do a competition. Just let somebody else run it. Go out as competitor number 24, and that's all I am, and just go out and just compete. That's in the plans for next year. I'm 40, so I can compete Masters next year.
You're going to go Masters?
Yeah, well, I'll go Masters in the CrossFit Open, but I'll probably go Open or Team. My brother and I might team up and do Arizona next year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty cool. Phil and I were talking about maybe not as teams, but both going to Arizona just to kind of – it's nice to go to the first event and be part of the kickoff,
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if Mendoza's going in the Open, I'm going in the Open. I got to just settle this in my head. I got to settle this in my head once and for all.
What are you trying to settle in your head, Kenton?
Well, as a competitor myself, I'm always wondering, man, like last year when Phil just freaking went out there and just dominated the circuit and was a national champ, I was like, I don't know if I could beat Phil. I don't know. So I got to settle this once and for all. I'm going to be in Arizona. I'm coming. I'm coming for you, Mendoza.
That's all right, man. Hey, I've said it before. You know what? To me, the more guys like you and like Ray and Brock and the guys that have continuously been finishing well, and Gabe, these guys from Oregon now, who I don't know, but I'm looking forward to meeting and competing against. Man, you know what? It's all making us better,
Oh, yeah.
It's all going to just – what's that?
By the way, those two boys from those two men from Oregon, Trevor Neostrath and Travis Smith, those guys are the real deal. You guys, I'm telling you, competition stepped up a whole nother level this year. It was so fun to watch. I'm telling you, it's only going to get better. I think in 2 years, I'll be happy to be running them. not going out there and get, you're right though. Hey, Phil, you're right. It's really, in the end, it's all about just going out and getting better. And if you have a guy that is motivating you to get your workout in when maybe you don't want to get it in, that's great. But you know as well as I do, when all the dust settles, we're all shaking hands and we're buddies and we're like, we can't wait to compete against each other the next time. You know, it's exactly what it's about.
No, and that's it, man. Cause you know, being able to meet these guys and here's the deal. Whether the haters want to admit to this or not, but the guys that are out there and girls that are competing and doing well and, you know, being social and, it's, you know, if you need something, you know, if somebody's going somewhere, hey, you know, I've got to hunt in Idaho this next year. I'm going to reach out to such and such from Idaho and see if they can, you know, give me some ins and outs or, you know, not so much give me a honey hole, but tell me where not to go or where, you know, check this place out. Or when you're in town, hey, you know what, make sure you check out such and such, you know. It's that kind of community and that kind of, you know, assistance that we're there to offer each other. That, you know, that, man, that's what it's all about. Because, like I said, you know, we're not quitting our day jobs to go win train to hunt events, you know, but we are taking a break from our day jobs to go participate in train to hunt event and, you know, basically enhance our relationships in that community. Because in the end, you know, it's all worth it. And those relationships somewhere down the line, you know, they're gonna pay off. They're gonna be beneficial, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's fun to see. It's fun to watch, and it's probably my favorite part about the end of each event is just seeing people who maybe at the very beginning didn't even know each other's names, who are hanging out, talking, having a beer together, and talking about hunting. And I can't remember exactly who it was, but there was a guy that came up to me after Nationals, and I said, so, man, what'd you think? And he said, well, I'll tell you what my favorite part about Nationals was. And I said, well, what's that? And he said, I know that this guy and this guy are one phone call away. If I am anywhere, if I have a bull down anywhere, these guys are one phone call away and they'll be there. And those are the right guys. Those are the kind of guys that I want to help them pack out. And you hit it with them. That's what it is, Bill. It's about, because I said it last year, and I even said it on this podcast, but man, it can be lonely it can be a lonely world being kind of the hardcore, I guess I'm air quoting that, hardcore hunter, the fitness, go get them, go deep, go fight, go hard. It can be a lonely world. And until you meet guys that are just like you, it's almost like an instant bond, right? Like it's almost an instant bond. Like you start talking to these guys about where they're hunting and you know, what they enjoy and what part of hunting they like and how they did last season. And it's like this instant bond of you want to help them. You want to hunt with them. I'd love to hunt with, countless numbers of people that I've met. Just like, these are the guys I want to be hunting with. You know, because it's like-minded people. And until Train to Hunt and I started these competitions, I knew there were guys out there. I knew, you know, like Cameron Haynes is in the forefront. Everybody knows that he's that. That's him. That's his personality. That's his method. That's what he does. That's what he's done for a long time. But there was only a handful of people that really were recognizable, hard, you know, kind of backcountry, hard way type of guys. And now, dude, I know hundreds of them. I know hundreds in all different kinds of states. That if, like you said, if I was planning a hunt in Colorado, I got five guys that can call in Colorado and just say, hey, do you want to join me on a hunt? Hey, if I get a bull down, would you have time to, you know, come help pack out or whatever? And I know that those guys would be there because that's the type of guys they are. That's the type of guy I am. By the way, Bill, if you're coming to Idaho, you better get a hold of me, man. I'm an Idaho boy.
Yeah. No, man, so get this on Braden, right? Braden comes with me last week.
Wait, so Phil's going to Idaho?
Idaho is always in the books. It's just a matter of when I'm going to make it happen. But Braden went out to Idaho this year for bear hunting. You know, and he called me before he went out because he went solo. And he's like, man, you know, so that's one thing that may be in the books for next year is some bear hunting, just depending on how the year rolls out. But, you know, with Braden coming with me last, I mean, so, you know, just to kind of put things in perspective, last week I had two guys took 5 days off of work to go with me on a sheep hunt. And, you know, other than to work their ass off and take a beating on the mountain, you know, and enjoy some sheep hunting, and they were happy to do it. And here I go, I'm leaving tomorrow morning again, and Aaron's going with me for another 5 days. So it's like, to have friends like that, man, it's humbling because, you know, it's just, I don't know how I can repay them other than be there when they need it, you know? And with Braden, you know, we're talking about elk hunting, and he, you know, he's like, I still don't know what I'm doing opening weekend. And I told him, I said, you know what? I said, if you need somebody to go with you when you're going opening weekend, you let me know, I'm there. You know, I've got my tags in other places. But for him to sacrifice work and time away from his normal life to come out there with me, then to repay it, I'd be happy to, you know. And that's what it seems like, this kind of community, it's what it is, man. I mean, it goes, you know. And another example, you know Dan Fisher and Nate Kimball, those guys, they competed in Colorado. You know, they know that how much I struggled to get the shop open, and you know, even with my hunt and everything, scrambling on time. They've been at the shop a couple times, helped me put up divider walls and stuff after work, you know? And it's like, you know, guys that I've met through the Train to Hunt events, and it, you know, they and I don't even ask, you know, they say, hey, do you need help, you know? Right. And they're there. So it goes without saying. It's just the amount of awesome people that I've been able to meet and associate myself with. That it's, you know, the reason I started my shop and got into archery and got my family into archery a few years back, man, it's just magnified with this community, you know, being involved in it, because it's just taking it to another level.
Good. On that note, if anybody of you listeners out there want to be part of what Phil's talking about, come one, come all. I don't care if you're a hunter and just an archer, if you just want to meet some really cool people, you've got to come to a Train to Hunt event. Start by going to the traintohunt.com site, start the workout, get engaged with the comments, and then just let it roll and go right to a Train to Hunt event.
That's right, bitches. Get off your fat asses. Put the Cheetos, the remotes down, and your iPhone down. Take a fucking second to fire up the website, get on there, get motivated, and get signed up. I know guys who are pretty overweight right now, but now, because of Train to Hunt, and because it's giving them the motivation to go forward, they're now looking to do elk hunts that they had never looked at before for fear of dying on the mountain. And that's just sad.
That's
you don't want to go out there and die on the mountain. So get your fat ass up and get motivated. Or even if you're not fat and you just need some motivation, you want to be part of this atmosphere that is out there, and it's the most – there's no more powerful, no more enigmatic, no better place you could be if you are a hunter or you're going to want to get into hunting or an archery than a Train to Hunt event. All these other events are kind of like if you're a kindergartner looking at the cool high schoolers. You don't want to go to them other little kindergartner events. You want to come play with the big boys that Train to Hunt.
And nowhere else other than the Natural Born Hunter podcast are you going to get Will Bradley going from calling people bitches to using the word enigmatic in the same paragraph. So, you know, hey. You know, it is what it is, man. We're all here to promote. We're here to encourage, but we're also here to entertain. So that being said,
well, here's the thing, Phil. Sometimes you just got to cut the shit and say, "Sign up, bitches! What are you waiting for? Stop being the keyboard tough guys. You know, come out and prove your worth. Prove you got what it takes. You know, I'm sure your fingers are tired from poking your computer screen and playing on the keyboard, but guess what? It's time to get up, get out, and get some.
No, and I agree. I think that, you know, last year, I heard a few people say, oh, you know, you guys do that train to hunt stuff, you know. And then this year, it just keeps growing and it's spreading. And you get some real badasses out there competing, you know, flat out. And so it's only going to grow. It's only going to continue. And, you know, like Will said, you got two choices. You can sit behind the computer and wonder what it's like to go do an event or talk shit about it. Or you can just, you know, suck it up, get yourself ready, get your bow, get your pack, and come play.
That's right.
So
I think it's going to continue to attract the right people. And my hope and dream for the ultimate prize is always going to continue to grow too. Eventually, the champions are going to be doing what they train for, and that's hunting. You know, like eventually, within the next 5 years, guys, and I was on a podcast because I'll announce this to the world. Within the next 5 years, the champions, national champions, will be going on fully paid hunts for their efforts because that's what they train for. And so, it's just a great opportunity to do all of the above. Get yourself a hunt, get yourself in shape, pass it on to the next generation, meet some great people. There's no downside. Let's just say that. There's no downside.
You know, not only that, and I know Kenton really wants to do this too, he will throw in an all-expense-paid trip to come and either shadow Phil or I during the podcast so you can see how this magic happens. Phil and I will volunteer our time. You know, everything else is on Kenton.
Hey, as long as you keep your shirt on.
Like, I make no promises.
That podcast was awesome. The shirtless podcast.
I don't even know where that came from. I just, you know, it's that sexual persona Ben Greenfield puts on, you know.
Hey, you have to tell me. If you guys haven't seen that episode, you got to go back and check that one out. I really enjoy this podcast. I think that that you guys have a lot of great people on that, and it's really fun. It's fun to listen to. I think that it's going to continue to grow. And on that note, Will, I have a personal question for you.
All right, let's get to it.
So you're a newly married man.
Yeah.
How's married life? How's it feel different than dating?
I'm a very happily married man, Kenton.
There's just something magical about being a married man, isn't it?
You know, there is. I like being a married man. I like wearing the ring around. I got one of these rubber rings that cost like $50. It's the best thing I ever did. Wear it working out. You can wear it while you're at work. You know, and I keep telling Melanie every time she looks over at me, I just lift up my ring finger and I got one ring to rule them all.
I'm going to confess, the first thing that came to my mind when you said I was wearing a rubber ring was, Will, you're married now.
I wouldn't wear those anyways, Ken.
That could have went south real quick.
Yeah, that went south real quick. But, hey.
In the words of Phil Mendoza, I'm a very, very happily married man.
Hey, aren't we all? Behind every great man is a great woman.
That's right. I'd starve to death, that's for sure.
And a patient one. Behind every great hunting man is a very patient woman.
Oh, you got that right. You got to be patient to be with a man who hunts.
Yeah, so how's that? Let's talk about that if we got time. That's a topic that I think doesn't get covered a ton on podcasts, and that is the dynamic of a family unit during the month of September. It's always the joke about, like, the widower you know, how the wife basically, she's on her own for the month of September, but I would love to hear from somebody with a ton of knowledge and experience and hacks on how to make it a little easier every September on the wife and family, because it always seems to come up around the end of August. I can just kind of see the whole dynamics of the family going, you know, daddy will be home soon. I'm just going to go on a hunt. It's tough. It's tough. I know that you're not a family man quite yet, Will, but I know Phil feeling my pain right now.
Yeah. And it's going to be a little different here in the Northeast too, because our hunting's so different. It's like, if you want to take your wife and kids hunting, you know, it's a lot easier to do in a stand situation, you know, or in
a
blind.
True.
So for
that's
me, true. You know, it's easy. Melanie, I just make her come with me most of the time. I'm like, if you want to spend time together, you know, here's the thing. I either tell her, either A, don't complain that we don't spend time together if you're not going to come out and hunt. And she is a beau, and she actually, tonight, she didn't want to do... Or we, for some reason, we didn't have time to, we weren't going to make it to CrossFit. And she's like, let's do a train to hunt workout. So that's what I have. I'm pretty fortunate, you know, that my wife is suggesting train to hunt workout and bow shooting for our time, you know. But
So what you're telling me is use the tough guy approach. Hey,
yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't.
Either in or out.
No wiggle room. But this is pre-marriage, and I've already decided that you know, if we were to have a kid or you know, something like that, that I'm from day one. I'm taking, as soon as I'm able to take my child, you know, knock on wood, hunting. It's going on. Because I built a couple stands that I made purposefully for taking, you know, kids and people, Melanie, you know, hunting, because they're more comfortable. And, you know, you don't quite see the deer you would other places. But you know what? It's nice to be out there without the cell phones, without the distractions, just the two of you. You know, you watch the sunset, you watch whatever wildlife is around. And, that, you know, I plan to keep continuing that. You know, you make a sacrifice, maybe not being the hardcore hunter you would want to be, but, you know, they're making concessions too to come out with you. So I try to meet in the middle a little bit there.
I'm going to try something new this year.
All right, let's hear it.
Hawaii?
I'm gonna hire a pool boy, and I don't have a pool. So I'm gonna see how that treats me.
I don't have a pool. Hey, you probably have some. Probably have a garden and a lawn. Just hire a lawn.
A lawn man.
I'm gonna hire Sancho to come cut my lawn for me. Oh, I'm gone.
Oh man. You know what? I haven't figured it out, but I'm giving it a try this year. My wife might actually listen to this podcast, but if she does, the cat's going to be out of the bag. I actually started a vacation fund. So, like, right after September, like, right in, like in that area, I got a little vacation fund to play for this. All right, I'm going to go and do my, you know, go to September, and then after that, we're gonna go on a vacation, and it's just gonna be you and I, and we'll get some deflate time. So I'm gonna give that a shot.
Ooh, that's smooth.
You know, tit for tat, right?
Hey, I like that. I like that. Dangle the bait out there, like, hey, if you can just make it through this 30-day period, you will win a vacation.
That's right. You're the winner of a great vacation.
You just gotta stay with me.
It's tough. It's one of those things that when we got married, she knew I was a hunter, and she appreciates that. She knows that I need my time in the woods. She's very supportive of that. But at the same time, it's not always about like her not wanting me to be gone either. It's tough for me to be gone for too long away from the family. But I'm with you, Will, in that just as soon as you can get the family involved and with your adventures. And yeah, like you said, maybe we're not going on a, you know, on a 2-week doll sheep hunt in the brook, but if we can just get them out, and maybe, you know, we might have to do a little car camping and kind of break them in slowly, and just get them out and show them kind of, this is where daddy's going, when he goes, and so at least they get an idea about what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. So.
Oh yeah, that's a solid plan. You know, kind of dip their feet in little by little. You know.
It's a tricky topic. I'd love for somebody smarter than me to write a book on how to how to assess the family dynamics around hunting season. And I think chapter one should be hire a pool boy.
You know, I could see Ben Greenfield coming out with something on this.
I could an ebook of some sort.
Yeah, that's right up his alley.
That is.
I actually this helped too. Melanie was actually a vegetarian when we met, and to get her out hunting, I did two things. One, she's a big fan of pink, so I said, you know, they have women's camo, and you can get some stuff in pink, so that definitely helped. And two, I lied to her, and you know how bears will kill cubs of other bears to get the sow back into heat, right?
Yeah.
I told her bucks did that to fawns.
You did just so that she didn't feel so bad when you killed bucks?
Yeah, exactly. And so I got her out there, right? So I got her out there. I was like, if you want to spend, and this is when we were dating, and you have a much stronger negotiating force behind you when you're just dating, right? And so I said, yeah, you should come out, you know, because what I'm really doing is keeping those big, mean bucks from killing those little deer. And so I got her out there. And it was like, this is before I bow hunted, and it was gun season, and this little spike horn's coming out, right, into the field, and it had been a slow day, hadn't seen much, and she goes, hey, here comes a buck, and I go, oh, yeah, he's a little guy, about to sell a golden retriever. She goes, shoot it? I'm like, no, I'm not going to shoot it. It's too small. And she goes, well, then give me the gun. I'm going to shoot it. And I was like, what? I go,
really?
I go, you can't shoot it? Do you even know where to shoot a deer? She goes, no, but I'm lucky at these things. So it just took me one day to get her to drop the whole vegetarianism. And that's, like I said, natural born hunters, that instinct had kicked in that day of sitting in the woods. And she was in from then on.
Her mama instincts kicked in.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. Will, geez.
Yeah, she later, I actually never told her the truth about the whole bucks didn't do that thing till we were out on a hunting drive, and my buddy Ryan and her were set up, and they were waiting at the other end, and I was on the drive part, and she goes to him, all right, we got to kill these big, mean bucks so they don't hurt those little baby deer. And he goes, what? She's like, you know, we got to kill the big mean bucks, or they're going to kill a baby deer. And he goes, who told you that? She's like, well.
Well, you're in the background giving the slash throat. Nobody.
Exactly. Needless to say, by the time the drive was over and I had met back up with her, she was none too happy about my story.
Yeah, you were doghouse that night.
Oh, I you know, but hey. My heart was in the right place.
Oh, well.
So if the pool doesn't work, lies and deceit is your next step.
Yeah. Is that the end lesson here?
Yeah.
Well, I actually kind of did a little bit of what Ken did. I do have a couple-day trip planned for us once September is over for us to take a little getaway from the kids. But I guess at that point, I'm just going to hope that she wants to go with me and not with the pool boy. So we'll see after the month, man.
So far, the tactics we've come up with are deceit and bribery.
Right on. All right, man. Hey, guys. I don't mean to cut it short, but I'm going to have to get stuff wrapped up here with the kids and get them to bed and get ready to get back in the...
Oh, we have business we got to take care of. This podcast is brought to you by Mountain Ops. Recently, Phil himself has ordered some Mountain Ops using what code, Phil?
NBH20. That's NBH for Natural Born Hunter.
That's 20. Right. And that will get you 20% off your Mountain Ops purchase. Great guys making some best products, really hustling when it comes to the game, you know. And if you're considering, you know, taking some supplements, maybe you need a little more protein in your diet, or you're looking for a pre-workout, I would definitely recommend you give them a shot and use that code NBH20. Get 20% off. That's like 20% free right back to you. You know, how you can't beat that.
That's it. And you know, if you guys are on social media, why don't you go ahead and poke Casey or Jordan over there at Mountain Ops and tell them that you appreciate them working with Natural Born Hunter Podcast.
And, that's right. I can get Phil to send me more photos, you will see more of Phil on our social media sites too.
Hey man, I'll see what I can do. I'll see if I can't snap a few photos this weekend for you, Will.
There we go. Don't let Aaron have all the fun.
Yeah.
Also, this is a public service announcement. One of our listeners wrote to me, and he lives in Western Washington in Kitsap County. And he's looking for, what he's interested in is anybody willing to kind of take him under their wing as, you know, an apprentice. He's looking to get into bow hunting and, you know, maybe in a group situation, if someone would be willing to like take him out for a day or two, show him the ropes. Good dude. I'm going to shout out to Brock. I'm kind of looking at you on this one because I think that's your area. But if anyone's out there and willing to do that, just hit us up on our Facebook page and we'll connect the two of you.
That's it. All right on, guys. I enjoyed it, Kenton. Appreciate you coming, joining the conversation. We'll talk again soon, man. I know we got a busy off season, but looking forward to getting ready for next year.
Absolutely. So, hey, best of luck to you, man. Go out there and get that sheep on the ground and eat it on site.
Hey, man, that's the plan. I was joking around about going ultra lightweight with my camo thong and just a few snacks, so that way I made sure and got something down so I had food to eat.
What? How is that coming up at the last minute of the podcast?
Save the best for last.
Yeah, we're going out on a strong note. Next year, we will have trained hunt camo thongs.
Got to go ultra lightweight, you know. Shave that couple extra ounces off by going with the thong. So
Phil will have himself all nared up just to lose all that hair weight.
You never know, Will. You never know.
No, you don't. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Natural Born Hunter Podcast with our elite, with our illustrious and esteemed and super fit guest, Kenton Claremont, founder and really the man behind everything you see with Train to Hunt. Thank you very much for your time, Kenton.
You bet. Thank you, Will. Appreciate it.
All right. Wake up, chase dreams, repeat.